Morning.
How are you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Still got a bit of a cough hanging around, but my daughter's sick again. The one that was in hospital, she's got a temperature again, so that's great.
More Moana for you.
Yeah, she's got, we're playing on the Echo in her room at the moment. It's keeping her happy. Is it cold there? What's the temperature like there?
It was -4 yesterday. It's slightly warmer today at -1, so it's...
Yeah, I think it's
practically toasty.
I don't know what. I've got all these screens everywhere, and not one of them's got temperature on it. Oh, it's 1 degree outside, apparently. But yeah, it was pretty cold this morning. There was still some. We had a bit of snow, just like a tiny bit that sort of settled. But I mean, it was millimeters, and it was so cold it didn't melt. So that's been sticking around for a couple of days. But yeah, it's been pretty cold in the walks.
It's not pleasant. I'm hoping it's going to end soon, but we'll see.
Right, just bring it
on. HomePod pre-order? Yeah, store's down, you've got to rush, you've got to get there as quick as possible, 20 minutes, sold out.
Yeah.
It's not an iPhone, is it?
I mean, they didn't put the time on, so I figured it's going to be at some point in the day, but I did, you know, I'm usually up 7:30-ish anyway, so about 10 to 8 till about 8:10, I was checking, and then at about 8:20, while I was on the walk with the dog, I was just like, okay, this is not happening yet. Forget about it. So I just left it. And then it was, I think it was like lunchtime, wasn't it? Or later in the day. It was like 2-ish or something.
It was. I was in a queue at McDonald's and I was checking my phone and I saw Not Johnny Ive say, you can finally order my HomePods if you want. And I was like, oh, shit. And I went over to the Apple Store, bought it. And then I went on Twitter, I went, HomePods now available. And then my Twitter refreshed. And then you had said the exact same thing like 6 seconds before.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was still like 20 minutes after they'd come out.
It was a complete fluke. And I actually had a client meeting. And we were going through, we're doing a mind map of this app and this website that I'm working on, this platform. And every now and again, I was just going, excuse me one sec, going to the page, refresh. Nope, not available yet. Okay, let's continue. And then we kept going. It's like, you are not as important as me refreshing this page. I'm sorry. It was a complete fluke when I went on there. That it must have literally gone live as a fluke when I went there because there was no one tweeting at the time about it. I did a search later and there was sort of tweets buried away from a few seconds earlier or 30 seconds earlier. But in my sort of time,
20 minutes before us. Which is why I was surprised. I was like, I'm surprised no one else has mentioned it. But then I guess no one's buying them because they didn't sell out until yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. So I ordered two because I always figured, you know, I don't want to order one. And if by some miracle they do sell out, I can't get one for a month and I really want another one and I can always return it. So I ordered two. And then I had a weird experience with the Apple Pay process where it came up with, my normal Apple Pay is my business account. So that's what my normal default Apple Pay when I'm buying things from Apple, you know. And if I'm using my watch or whatever, I use my personal account. So I went through the Apple Pay checkout process and it comes up with your sort of card. And I changed, and it was coming up with my personal card. And I said, I'm not having that, you know, I want to change that to my business card. And then it sort of authorized it and it wasn't really clear whether it had used that card or not because there was no confirmation that that's what had happened. It authorized me before I'd fully changed the card, if you see what I mean. It was just a really weird experience, and it was weird enough for me to think I don't know what's just happened. I've ordered it, but I don't know what I've paid. I don't know who's paid. So Apple don't take the money immediately, so you don't know until it ships. So I went on to Apple support and just asked them, and of course because it's Apple Pay you get a token, so they don't know what the card is. Although they did, one point they did say they did think that it was the card that I thought it was, which was the business one, but it wasn't good enough. So basically, it was still available, and I just thought I don't want to mess around with this, so I just cancelled it and I reordered it again, and then this time I used my proper card. But at that point, I thought I'll just get one. I'm not sure about two, so I just got the one. But then about a week ago, it was still available on the 9th, and I thought, I think I'm still going to end up getting this thing, having it in the office, which is where it's planned to go, if I just get one. And then think, I really want this in the house, so I ordered another one. So I've probably got two separate deliveries coming tomorrow now, which is fun.
Nice. I don't have, my business account doesn't have Apple Pay, which is infuriating. It's Barclays, and they just don't have Apple Pay for their business. They do for personal. So I always have to, whenever I buy stuff from Apple, if I want to buy it with my own money, I use Apple Pay, but if I don't, then I just you know, do the normal one, and my default saved card is a business one, so it usually goes through fine. I just ordered one. I ordered the white one because it's going to go in my kitchen. Okay. And I've started some home renovations in preparation for the HomePod, because my kitchen is kind of like a rectangle. And if you imagine it was like a letter T without the two bits at the top, those bits are where the doors are in and out. So you've got
a so like a letter I.
Yeah, I guess. No, because it's where the it's like in the if it was a rectangle, your coordinates it'd be at the northwest and northeast are where the doors are.
Okay.
So it's like I see. A T with the bits locked off. A capital okay. T, I should have said.
Gotcha.
And then so the problem is that the kitchen door going in opens at like a 90 degree angle, obviously like doors do, and it covers the top wall, like the back wall.
Right.
But at the moment I have two Sonos Play 1s mounted literally up on the ceiling there. But the HomePod would, the only place it can go is on a table behind that door, because we have a little table that's there next to a sofa. Yeah. Because I can't put it on my kitchen table, which is in the middle of the room, because there's no power nearby. And also it's a standalone table, so it looks stupid. It should have a cable trailing across the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had to put it behind the door, and I was like, that's not going to work, because it's going to bounce off the sides. And like, I know that they've got this auto-sensing stuff, but it's not going to be good enough when three sides of it are contained. And it's got to bounce around everywhere else. So I was like, So then I took the door off and bought a baby gate instead. Put that eggs. I shut my dogs in the kitchen at night, so we couldn't not have the door. So I was just like, buy a baby gate, that'll do. So I've gone to the fairly extreme step of taking a door off.
Of remodding your house for the HomePod. You should get some of those beady things they used to have in the 70s from that hang down as well from the doorway. You know, when people took their doors out and put the bead curtains. That would be awesome. Have you seen, like, there's a video that there was a video of a kid doing the double stairgate. Do you see that? Some parent had put a stairgate in the doorway to stop this kid coming through. I guess they didn't want their kid in the room with them. And basically it got over the stairgate. So he put another stairgate above it. And there's this video of this kid climbing both and getting over. It's like, oh my God. Like, you are not keeping me out of this room. So just watch it with the dogs.
Just get a door.
Quite cool, though.
Shouldn't you just get a door at that point?
Yeah. Well, when we were in hospital, they had a brilliant trick with certain doors that they didn't want, like, kids getting into, the kitchens and things. They put a double handle. So there were actually two handles on the door, one at the normal level and one higher up. So that basically, you know, even if a kid could open the bottom one, they couldn't get in. So I thought it was quite cool. But yeah, that's quite extreme going to, that's basically, a lot of people would go, I don't need one. I've got no place for it. But it's like, nope, I'm going to change my house and create a place for it.
My first plan was just to run cabling. It would have had to be about 5 meters of cabling, so I would have had to run it over a door frame, round, into the middle of the room, and then across. And I did think about that, and I was like, I think it would be nicer on the kitchen table. But then I was like, no, that spot's the best spot by the sofa. That'd be great. And that's where the Sonos are currently, but on the back wall. But I've also bought some stands for my Sonos Play 1s, because they're going to go as my rear stereo pair in the living room. And the stands were 80 quid. I couldn't believe it. I went on to, I was like, you know, it'd be 12 quid, get a, you know, speaker stand, it'll be fine. No, they're crazy expensive. They're not like official ones or anything. They're just, someone's made these.
Oh, wow.
They're huge, but they're specially designed for them. They've got like, the cable goes down the middle of the pipe, so it like tidies it away, and it's like got big weighted beam at the bottom. Shouldn't topple over, because they are quite heavy. Like, if you had a thin tripody type one, it might wobble a bit, especially if one of my dogs just hits it or something, which probably will. So I'm hoping it's worth it. They just arrived about 10 minutes ago, so I'm going to set that up later on and get the stereo sound working in preparation for tomorrow.
So have you got a play bar, is it? Or what
Yeah,
have you
got a play bar.
So that's the one that the TV sits on?
No, that's the play
base. Is it the bar?
So you've got the play base and the play bar, and the play bar is a sound bar. It's just a big... I think it's got seven speakers in it, which is one less than the HomePod, which is embarrassing.
So what do you get? Is that 5.1, 7.1? What do you get with all that?
Well, so with the bar on its own, I mean, it's just stereo speaker, really, because it's just a big soundbar across the front of the TV. It's supposed to do like fake surround sound and stuff. And to be fair, sometimes it does, and it's when it does do it, you're like, ooh, shit. But it does like bass and stuff as well. It's got like it packs out. I mean, I don't think it needs more bass. It's got enough. You can then buy a subwoofer for it, which is huge.
Exactly.
It's the same price as the playbar. So the playbar, I think, is £700, and the subwoofer is £700. And if you do that, then basically all the subwoofer stuff that the playbar is doing, it offloads to that instead. So then it can reuse some of its speakers to make the sound better, like in the mid-range, which is kind of cool. And then if you have the rear speakers, so you buy 2-play 1s or 2-play 3s, then it offloads those channels to those rear ones wirelessly. So again, it can make the front and left and right sound better. So in theory, by adding my two rear speakers, I should get proper surround, but also my front speaker should start sounding better as well, hopefully.
And then, all they need is that they just, the rear ones just need a power plug. That's it. And they're completely wireless.
Yep.
Yeah. So, because my whole TV setup is just so crap at the moment. We used to have this Sony really nice, I can't remember the model name. It was a DVD player, silver, really nice metal silver thing. And it's years old. And it had these little cube speakers. I can't even think what they would be similar size to, but you could hold, you know, they'd sort of fit in the palm of your hand. And there'd be a left front, left to right, center. There was a subwoofer and there were two rear ones. It was all wired, unfortunately. So you had to run wires under carpets and everything, but it was just the best surround system. It was only 5.1 or whatever, but it was just an awesome surround system. And they had two little stands for the rear speakers and the front ones, actually. And if you got it set up right, it was just really, really nice. And then I think the DVD player or the sounds, the actual volume started going wrong. And it was almost like, you know, when you sort of have an input where you've got like a speaker connected to another input system and you get that background hiss because you've got your volumes out of sync type thing. There was weird stuff going on with that, which it was definitely the device itself. And the DVD player had stopped working and we didn't watch DVDs anyway. So I ended up getting rid of it. And I was looking at other Sony stuff just because I've got Sony TV and they usually work well together. And I got a bar, but that wouldn't fit on the damn cabinet and just didn't look right. So I sent that back. And I eventually got this 3D Blu-ray player, which comes with the whole surround sound system. And the key thing for me is the wireless rear speakers. So this has two speakers that are connected by wires, but to a little box, and then that does this wireless link. But it's brilliant. I mean, any solution I tried to retrofit wireless to the rear speakers before, always, like if I turned my laptop on, the Wi-Fi interfered with it. It was just so annoying. Whereas this works perfectly. Although I've got several issues with the sound system. One is that the damn design of it is, it's got that one of these stupid top-loading glass sliding Blu-ray players, which is at an angle, so you can't stack it. So whatever shelf you put it on, that's it. That's the only thing you can do with it. And it's glass, which means it's a whole dust magnet and it's horrible. Secondly, it just now and again, it's got better recently, but now and again, it just decides to stop working and you get a weird glowing flashing light on the front saying TV that doesn't make any sense. And you literally have to unplug it and plug it back in again. And then it takes, because the TV I've got, it's a great TV. It's 3D TV and everything, but it's not HDR or anything. And it's an HD TV, but the actual sound that comes out of it is the tinniest thing you've ever heard. It's terrible. But anyway, long story short, it works, but I've got all these issues with it. And the worst thing is that the damn Blu-ray player, I don't know whether it's updates that it needs or something, but sort of one in three Blu-rays that I buy, and I do it very rarely. It's mainly for the kids and old films that I like. The 3D doesn't work. So ironically, the damn Moana 3D I got for Rosie for Christmas doesn't work on it. And I ordered another one, and that doesn't work, and I've sent them back. So I'm still looking for a solution. Obviously, I'm going to need a 3D Blu-ray player, but you can get those cheap.
You want to buy an Xbox One X. There you go. Job done.
Well, I've got one of those Blu-ray.
You got 4K Blu-ray, you got 3D Blu-ray, done.
That will do 3D?
Yeah.
Ah, I didn't realise it would play 3D to a 3D TV. Might be the solution.
Well, all of the Xbox Ones do, so the one, the S and the X. But the S and the X are better because they do 4K Blu-ray as well.
Okay, that might make more sense then. So I've been looking at the Sonos. So it's interesting what you say about the subwoofer, because it is, like you say, it's like £800 or something.
And it is massive. Have you seen one in person? Like if you go to they have
And I've
them.
Got one already for the Sony, but it's probably, I don't know, it's probably A4 sheet of paper in cross-section, sort of that sort of size, and then it's about foot and a bit high, and it sits behind
huge.
The television.
This thing so if is I can, massive.
So if I can get the play base, sit the TV on the play base, and then just get two rear Sonos ones...
Yeah.
Because that's probably all you need for rear speakers. You don't need anything. You don't need Sonos 2 or 3. Or
no, see, I thought about the Sonos 3 because we have a Sonos 3. And I was thinking,
well, what's the difference? That with Heritage. It's more powerful? Or?
So there's the Play 1, Play 3, Play 5, and the numbers basically correlate to how many speakers are actually inside.
Okay.
So a Play 1 will basically be mono because it's one speaker. So the right. reason I have two in my kitchen is because they're joined as a stereo pair, so one does left and one does right. And they actually okay. do one does left and one does right, like headphones. The 3 can do stereo on its own because it's got three speakers in it. So okay. it has a left, right, and mid. And the 5 has 5 speakers. So it gives you richer sound okay. and, you know, pretty different sized tweeters. And I know nothing about audio, but my understanding is each one costs more, has more speakers, sounds better. That's the gist of it.
Okay, well, that's what I started looking at. Obviously, it costs a bloody fortune, but I just want something wireless that's going to work and doesn't give me all this hassle. And
I would think rear speakers, you only need the Play 1s because
right.
it's, you know, you don't get a huge amount that happens behind you and you don't want it to
no, exactly.
what's in front of you. But I'll let you know when I've tried it in an hour or two.
Yeah, I'll be interested to
set
know,
it up and see how it works. Because at the moment, I've no idea how well it works. All I've done is read about it and gone, oh, that's really good. So I'm hoping it's, we'll see.
Yeah. Because I reckon the base level that we probably have with the subwoofer that we got now is probably not, you know, we don't do pumping music no. and pumping stuff. So I reckon it's probably even less than the play yeah. whatever it's called, play bass will come
well,
with anyways.
I need to try and turn down my bass on my play bar because it's actually too bassy. It's a bit too much. Yeah,
that might be an interesting solution. I need to get rid of because we got one of these, I bought one of these little quarter cabinet things, but it's one of these, again, glass, three glass layers, which... It's just the weird, you know, worst wire management problem you've got ever. Because yeah. no matter what you do and how you initially do it, where you do all the wires down the little back stand part and hide them all away, when other things get plugged in or Christmas comes and stuff gets moved, you just end up with this wires. And then the worst thing is I've got that dream screen LED thing on the back of the TV to give you like ambi light.
Oh yeah,
and it's really cool, but I have to turn off the bottom light because if the yeah. bottom light comes on, it basically silhouettes all the wires. You just see this like loads of wires underneath the TV. It's like, damn it. So I want to get a solid cabinet, like a corner cabinet that just everything goes in and everything's tucked behind and you can't see anything. And I want to just sort it all out. I've been wanting to do it for years, but I'll try and sort it out this year as a project. But let me know. It'd be cool.
Yeah, I think it'll be good, but I need to set it all up. I think having the reason I bought the speaker stands and spent a ridiculous amount on them is because I don't want to drill everything into the walls and then get it all going yeah. and be like, this isn't actually any good.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of sound, I've got a pair of Beats 3, which nice. Arrived, Beats Studio 3, which Studio arrived yesterday, 3. Which I'm wearing now. Yep. They're actually smaller than I thought they were. I mean, when I opened the thing, you know, because I've tried the Solos before, which are obviously tiny, but these sort of reminded me a bit. I was expecting this massive, great thing, you know, like Princess Leia buns that you sort of go right on the side of your head. And actually, they look pretty good. I mean, they're, you know, they're pretty small and they do the job and the noise cancellation is pretty good. So, yeah, quite happy with those.
Yeah, I've liked them for a while. I used to have Bose, the Quick Comfort ones, not wireless. They were wired noise cancelling ones back in the day. And I always liked them. And then when they broke, I ended up getting the Beat Studio 2. I forget why, there was a reason. But I picked those up and I was very happy with them, but they just fell apart a few weeks ago. So then I switched to the Studio 3s because of the W1 chip and they're really good. Work just the same as AirPods.
Yeah.
Like I've had no connectivity problems with them. My wife had the Power Beats 3. Is that right?
Yes.
The ones that are like joined
around the ear ones.
Yeah, for running.
Yeah.
And they disconnected all the time. She had so many connection problems with them. And I was like, they shouldn't get the W1 chip. It should be amazing. That was paired to her Apple Watch. And she just said, like, a number of times they just stopped working. And then the kicker was she did a marathon. And on mile three, they died.
Oh, no. That is the worst thing ever.
No music for the remaining 23 miles.
No,
so
the
I got
only
in trouble
reason,
when she got
yeah.
back.
The only reason I can do any running whatsoever is if I listen to something and it has to, it's not even music doesn't do it for me anymore because it's too It's not distracting enough. So I listen to podcasts now because it's just, you know, it's very distracting. You can get into the podcast and be angry at it or whatever, and you forget you've just done half a mile. So, but I did
I can
have
imagine you running through a field just shouting at nothing.
Oh yeah, I'll do that.
Angry old man running along.
Yeah. I mean, I'll do a little run in the morning with the dog, just before I take the kids go to school. Then I'll do another one in the afternoon, but it's normally like a brisk walk, you know, for an hour, a bit longer. And I'll regularly be walking along going, oh, you ridiculous man, and stuff like this. And if anybody is like walking nearby, they'd be like, what is going? Because especially now I've got the, it's the Power Beats in. You can't see the wire around the back of my neck. So I've got a scarf on and then I've got a hat on. So all you see is me walking along with a hat at a sort of brisk walk, shouting angrily, which, yeah, it must be a great impression.
That is my one complaint about AirPods. Is that when I wear my hat, it makes it look like I'm wearing pearl earrings because you just see the little white bits poking out each side, and I get weird looks as I walk along.
Yeah,
that's happened a number of times.
They do take every time I put them in, you end up looking in a mirror or something just to make sure they're adjusted so you don't look like an idiot. I saw the guy on, I think I tweeted about it ages ago. The guy, one of the guys who used to be on the Gadget Show, he was he's a tech journalist and does travel type stuff and travel tips. And there must have been a good reason, I'm guessing. He needed to hear the sound, and he only had one AirPod charged or something. But he basically had either his left or his right in the other ear and upside down, so it looked like it looked like he was using it as an aerial. Yeah. So I sort of just did this tweet saying that's not how you use them, because you just saw this AirPod going up from his ear, and I'm the only thing I can think is he knew what he was doing and there was a reason for it, but it was very funny. But yeah, they're great. And I've been using, the only thing they don't work well with is I plugged them into the Xbox One controller to play games with, and the mic doesn't work, and there's some reason to do with the Apple connection, and apparently you've got to use a split mic, but it's not a problem because I don't tend to do the whole mic thing anyway. I don't like talking to other players, I don't want to forget that I've got the mic on and say stuff, so I just listen. But I mean, I've been getting addicted to Fortnite, which is that, I don't know if you've seen the Battle Royale thing. It's nice anyway with the sort of Bose soundbar I've got on the desk. But as soon as you put the headphones on, it's bloody incredible because the sound, they've done this amazing thing with the, you know, directional sound. So you're standing in the middle of this sort of countryside on this island. You hear a gunshot go and it will come in the general direction properly so that you sort of then, as you turn, you know, the sound will then fill both ears, so you know and it's really, really, it's probably the first game I've played, because I'm creature of habit with Xbox games. I play very few. It's like Call of Duty, Titanfall 2, and whatever else I might play with. You know, I don't do this huge, I like stuff that I can just jump in, play, and get, you know, and done. And what I like about this is, everybody starts, you know, with nothing. You've got a pickaxe and that's it, and you land on the island, you've got to go and forage and find stuff. And when you're dead, you're gone, that's it, you start again. But it's one of the first games in a long time where it actually makes me, you know, I'm in an attic of a building and I've still got a bloody pickaxe. I've got a pickaxe and a bandage because I haven't been able to find anything else. And I can hear someone downstairs and you hear the bloody footsteps coming up the stairs. And it's that whole like, oh, shit, you know.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. And there's loads of times where someone's run around a corner and I'm like, oh, my God, you know. It's just great fun. So that sounds really cool.
It is a horrendous, horrendous clone of PlayerUnknown's Battleground.
Yes, which I played as well,
It is identical, apart from the cartoony retro vibe, and the fact that you can build stuff. And the reason for that is that Fortnite was originally a base-building game, which is why you have the ability to use a pickaxe and get stuff and then build walls and things. And then when PUBG was getting popular, they were like, yeah, we could do this. And it is just a shameless, shameless rip-off. But it is very, very good. I like it. I probably like it more than PUBG, actually. It's quicker. It's more fast-paced. Yeah. Whereas with
and also,
PUBG,
the graphics are nicer. The graphics are nicer. I mean, you know, PlayerUnknown has got a much bigger... I mean, I played that a couple of times, and I didn't get down to the last... I mean, at least in Fortnite, I got down to the last three at one point, but I didn't get anywhere near that in PlayerUnknown. But I just found considering I'm playing on an Xbox One X, which should be able to do, you know, brilliantly... I just found the graphics really tiring, but I love the sort of the colorful retro stuff of Fortnite. It's just really nice explosions, the way they're cartoony, and when you sort of launch your rocket and stuff. It's building stuff I'm getting better at, but because I really didn't understand it, And I was like, what the hell do you need to do this? And then obviously, as you get down to the final people, you suddenly realize, oh, shit, they're all building forts and I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm hiding in a bush, you know.
Yeah.
But that's actually really fun. That's what I love about it. I love the fact at one point I was hiding in a bush and you could sort of just see the head popping up. And if I don't turn too fast, my head doesn't move. So I just have to sit there. And literally around me, these people are killing each other. And I'm thinking, do I go out now? Do I go out now? And it's like, oh, shit.
I'll just wait here until there's one left.
Yeah. And then there's one left. And as he's picking up the bits, you're like, rah, gotcha. And you're, you know, total newbie. If you read the guys, it's all like, don't hide in bushes. But yeah, I do it all the time. Yeah. I do what I have to do.
That's my tactic.
Yeah.
Hiding in bathrooms is the best thing in PlayerUnknown. See, I play that on a GTX 1080 on my PC with like a big ultra-wide screen. And for most games, I can have it on like ultra settings, 100 frames a second. With that, it just crashes into like the mid-40s and it looks ass. Like, it just, it's so badly built. It looks like it's made up of stock components from Unity or something. It's horrible. Which is a shame because it's got so much money, like so many billions of pounds worth of money because they've got something like... they've broken the record for most number of concurrent players at once, which is used to be like 1.05 million, and now it's something like 3.5 million. Like that many people online playing at once at the same time. and they charge like 30 quid for the game, even though it was in early access. They've never done a sale, and then there's a load of loot box shit on top of it. So if you think how many copies they must have sold, but the game still looks like shit.
Yes, yeah.
It's a real shame. But no, Fortnite's great. I need to play more of it. I've only played a bit of Fortnite on the PC, but I'm going to play more of it.
What I like about it is that whole thing that it is, you know, you do, yes, there's a skill level to it in terms of people start to learn where to look and how to build and do and techniques, if you like, and strategy. But I just like the fact that you start with nothing and you've literally got to get down and it's whoever gets in that building first and gets the gun sort of type thing. It's great. Really like it.
Yeah. It's nice to have like an even... starting point, as you say, because then it does make it more exciting when sometimes you end up with nothing and sometimes you've got a really good weapon but then you get killed by someone with nothing.
I know.
it doesn't seem to make much difference.
Exactly. What other purchases have we got? You've got a big one, so I'll do my one next. I got another drone. So previously I had the Phantom 3, Phantom 4, then I had this Mavic Pro, which is the folding one that came out last year, or I think it was last year, early last year. And then I got the Spark last year, and the Spark was the smaller one with the fixed, didn't fold, so it had fixed arms, but I had lots of issues with it because they moved to some crazy double Wi-Fi system where with the Mavic Pro, you had a cable going from your phone to the remote, and that was your screen. And then the remote to the drone had this sort of 5.8 megahertz high power OcuSync connection, they call it, which was really good. And you could put the headset on and it was all wireless. With the Spark, they did this weird Wi-Fi to phone to remote and then Wi-Fi from remote to Spark, which just immediately sounds like a bad idea. You know, two Wi-Fi things going on at the same time. And it was terrible. And I crashed it on the first day and loads of people had issues. There was a wire connection. You could actually do the wire connection from the phone to the remote, but it wasn't supported, but it did work and it made it better. But it was always a bit flaky. So now they've come up with this Mavic Air, which is a smaller version of the Mavic Pro. It's not a replacement. It's got the 4K of the Mavic Pro, but it's got all the gesture stuff of the Spark. So you can launch it with your gestures and do gestures to wave to it and it'll follow you and things like that. It's really, really cool. And it uses the cable straight out of the box. It still has a Wi-Fi connection to the drone, but it's called enhanced Wi-Fi. And I've managed to get it to go about, well, a kilometer, just over a kilometer, with no signal issues. And that's more than far enough for me. You know, look, you get these guys in these groups on Facebook. It's hysterical when you watch it, the modifications they do to these things, where they'll do a distance test and they got it to like 5K and they've added extra batteries and everything else. And it's like, that's just a recipe for losing the bloody thing. one kilometer away is a long way. You know, I like it in line of sight, but it's great fun. It's mid-range pricing between the two. And I love it. Yeah, it works really well. So just thought I'd say that. I'm selling my Spark. I'm probably going to sell the Pro. And this will be the thing I carry around because you can literally just take it in your pocket, use your phone to connect to it. You can do these amazing quick shots. There was a really cool one I did yesterday called Asteroid, which zooms away from you while it flies away while it videos you into the sky, then does a 360 photo by moving the camera around, stitches it in real time, into a 31 or 37 megapixel image, then attaches it to the end of the video. So you get this crazy effect, which looks like it's flying away from you, and then you wrap into a ball. Everything wraps into a ball as if it's flying away from a little mini planet or something. It's amazing. I stuck it on Twitter. It was a really cool effect. And it just does that automatically. You know, just copy it off the card, it's done. So yeah, love it. That was my other big purchase.
Nice. Yeah, I've keep meaning to buy a new drone because I've still got the old Parrot Bebop drone, the original one. And I want one that's got like a gimbaled camera underneath because I want to get like the shots where you're looking straight down. Whereas at the moment, I've just got a fixed front one, which, you know, is fine. And I play around with it sometimes, but I don't do anything serious with it. And so I sort of think to myself, I could spend however much on one of these, or I could buy another graphics card or something. So it's fairly low on my priorities list, but I am tempted to get one. And more so after seeing the Mavic Air, actually. I've heard good things about it from a number of people, including you. Looks good. Yeah, I made a fairly big purchase this week because it's funny, you were saying about the snow and everything. Like I think this was a month ago, there was thick snow here and I was actually trapped in the house for 3 days because we live on a bit of a hill. Not much of one. I mean, we're just on a housing estate. Like we're only a 2-minute walk from the main road, but of course they don't grit down our road and it's on a bit of a steep hill. And my wife has a Mini, which was no use at all on the snow and ice. And I've got a Fiat 500L, which is a bit bigger and like quite nice if you want to have like a family and stuff at some point, because there's plenty of room for prams and baby seats and all that kind of shit. But the problem is it's got very small wheels and it's no good on ice either. And it's got a shitty little engine. And I've had it for a while. I was like, no, enough's enough. I wanted to buy myself a Tesla. I've been holding out for a Tesla for a while. And then I was like, no, fuck it. I'll go for the Land Rover Discovery. So I went in and test drove one. And then I was like, yep, I'll take that, please. And now it's coming in May.
Cool.
So that'll be nice. But it's got some pretty cool stuff in it. It's got like a adaptive cruise control, which is sort of Tesla-ish, where, you know, you've got your usual cruise control where you just stay, I want to go 70 miles an hour, and then you just off it goes. With this one, if it sees a car in front of you, it slows down and matches the speed of it. And then if the traffic stops, the car stops, and then you just put your foot on the accelerator when it starts again, and then it resumes doing the adaptive cruise control going behind it. So with that, I was like, it's kind of a nice enough jump up. I'm happy to do that. And it's going to be automatic, which will be fun because I've just got manual cars all my life pretty much.
I love automatic.
So it'll be a nice upgrade from that sense, and it has some decent acceleration on it as well. So I'm going to be very happy come May, but unfortunately my old car isn't going without a fight, and despite the fact I've been given like a part exchange price and everything, it's like, okay, fair enough, it's not what it'll do. And so yesterday it started having a knocking in the engine. I was like,
oh no.
I took it in to get serviced, and I don't know if they found what's caused that yet, but they have discovered that my brake pads and discs are all broken and lipped. And it's like, yeah, that'd be £800 to fix. It's like, oh, no. So now I've got to spend £800 on a car that's going to go soon and won't change its price whatsoever. So that's fun.
Yeah, it's annoying.
Another reason why I won't be buying a drone is because I'm buying brake discs instead.
I would love it if that was it. The Model 3 was out yet, or
yeah,
because I don't know. I don't know what the price over here was going to be, but it was something below 30, wasn't it? It was going to be like 27 or 20.
Yeah, I think 27,000. It's $33,000. Yeah. So I think 27,000 was the price.
Yeah, I mean, my problem is I can't, because I work from home and very rarely drive other than taking the kids to school. It's not really that justified for me to go and spend that sort of money on a car. Otherwise, I would. My car's a hybrid. It's an old Prius that I've got in about 2010, I think. And it was a couple of years old when I got it. And it's actually, I mean, I can't remember what I paid for it. It was like $9,500 or something. It was a used one. And I think it's still worth about $7,000 or $6,000, interestingly, because they seem to hold their value because they're hybrids. So when I've checked a few times, it's sort of held its value. So if I did a replacement for that now, I'd probably go for a small hybrid or a small electric. I was looking at those BMW i3s and i8s, but again, they're just crazy money, and I can't really justify it, so it's a shame.
Land Rover have got a hybrid. There's a hybrid Land Rover now. It's like,
oh, is there?
Mainly electric, but it starts at like 70,000, and I was like, ah, no, I'll go for petrol, please.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, it's, so I'm looking forward to getting that. It'll be fun. Do a bit of off-roading.
So yeah, I mean, it's that leads us interestingly and slightly related into how you can afford to do that now that native apps are going to die, because obviously,
what a segue. That's
the one, you know, again, I can't justify spending that much money on a car when I'm not going to be out of business this year, just like I was last year and the year before and the year before that and the year before that, because now we have PWAs, progressive web apps, everyone's going on about. People are deleting native apps from their phone and switching to PWAs because they're so amazing. Anything to say on that?
No. I will accept that the App Store review process is fucking ridiculous. Now, I was very much in the camp of being an Apple supporter on App Review, because back in the gold rush days of like 2009, I submitted an app and I was like, oh God, it's going to take ages and it's going to be... You hear so many horror stories of the rejection process and how things were just rejected for no reason and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I remember one of my apps got rejected for the reason that I wasn't allowed to tell people how to take screenshots of their iPhone, which I thought was an interesting rejection. But I got a phone call and it said Cupertino phoning. I like my phone because it tells you where it's coming from. I was like, huh. I was like, hello. He's like, hi, this is Steve from Apple. And I went, oh. And he went, not that one. I was like, oh. So I'm from the app review team. Just to let you know that we've rejected your app because you, in your app description, you say how to take screenshots on the phone and we don't want you to do that. So if you remove that, then it'll be fine. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I did that and it was fine. And I couldn't believe it that they'd phoned me to tell me how to fix it and stuff like that. And I was very impressed with the whole thing. And then since then, it only got better when they slashed the review times from like 2 weeks to 1 day. And it had all been going well. And then over the last 6 to 12 months, things have got a bit more bullshitty. Like, I've got one client who gets rejected every time. They've had apps in the App Store for like 5 years. Every time we submit a new update for one of their apps, it'll get rejected. And then we'll go onto like the thing and type back to them and say, no, you're rejecting it for something that's stupid. That doesn't make sense. And then they go, oh yeah, sorry. And then they approve it. And it's all to do with like auto-renewable subscriptions. They're like, you need to list all of this stuff. It's like, we do, if you press that button. And they're like, oh yeah, sorry. There's always something, always. And then it generally gets through. I had one of my apps called Pocket Rocket that lets you just view your pocket list and view them in a Safari view controller because it's nicer and easier on the split screen iPad because the Pocket app does its own rendering thing, which is terrible. So I built this little app. It's free, just does that. You obviously have to authorize it with your Pocket account, which it does via OAuth in a web browser. And so I take them to the web browser, they log in, it goes back as per Pocket's guidelines. And that got rejected recently because I wasn't using Safari view controller to do the OAuth flow. And I was like, why are you rejecting it for that? Like, it's taking them to a web browser and then it takes you back again. Like, I don't see what the deal is. And that's more secure because a Safari web browser, I could fake that. Like, I could make the app look like that because it's a standard control. It'd be very, very easy to make something like a UI web view internally in the app look like a Safari view controller and then steal their login details. This is far more secure. And they're like, yeah, all right. And then let me approve it. And then someone on the Safari web team was messaging me on Twitter and he's like, I don't see what your problem is with using Safari view controller. And I was like, it's just a fundamental, you know, if you're going to try and make something secure, don't reject me for it. So that was stupid. I just have loads and loads of stuff like that, little tiny niggles where things don't get approved. And now they've suddenly decided that people can't use emoji in their apps unless it's emoji that people have typed. So if you had, for example, so I've seen some people do this like in a table view, like in the settings, maybe they have icons, but instead of icons, they use emoji. So like support, they might have like a little life ring or something, or they might have a little thumbs up for rate app, that kind of thing. Or even like on a dialogue box, they say, do you like the app? Thumb up, thumb down, use those emoji. not allowed to do that anymore. You can only use it for bits where people are like typing in comments and using the emoji keyboard. You can't put emoji into your UI. But that's never been in the rules before, and they've just done it overnight. And I don't think the rules have been updated. So people just start getting rejected for it. It's just like, why?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of really stupid stuff like that at the moment. So I can understand why people are frustrated. And I think that's what prompted this thing, because the link that you posted on Twitter earlier today, the guy's saying, oh, it's because people are getting rejected because they're anymore. Why not use a progressive web app? It's way better.
Which is stupid for a number of reasons. Yeah, I tweeted something earlier. I quoted someone and just sort of rephrased the tweet, because it was like, you know, Apple rejecting apps. Apple are rejecting apps, so why not do your progressive web app? And I rephrased it, which is, you know, if you've got a shitty app and Apple are rejecting it, now you can do a shitty PWA app. Because there is some bullshit, definitely. I mean, they definitely have this sort of round robin type, you know, goes to the next support person and that person doesn't do very good checks and or does some very – I mean, I'm guessing they have some sort of post-upload analysis thing, which probably, you know, works out what the app is using, are using location and all kinds of things like that. And then I'm guessing when the person sees this app come up in their queue, they get a load of info about it, you know, uses location services, uses background fetch, uses all these things. And then they can quickly check it over and go, well, you seem to be using location services, but the app doesn't mention anything and doesn't seem to use, you know, doesn't seem to need it. So why are you using it and get rejected and all that? Yeah. So they probably got all this sort of stuff. But a lot of the decisions are then made. I mean, I would imagine they've probably also got automated stuff that comes up with related articles or related clauses from the, you know, the rules. And so they can very quickly, because you're not going to have someone sit there and take 2 hours to look at an app. There's going to be some very quick decisions. There probably could be some recommended warnings and things like that. And then they can just reject it based on that. Because that's the sort of stuff I've had where, I think I said it before, where, you know, I did an app that was a 360 pano app for somebody and it got rejected because I used the word demo in the screen. There was demo photo one, demo photo two in one of the screen grabs. That had to be changed.
Yeah.
there was, I can't remember the other, oh, the other reason was to do with the framework I use. With the framework I use, something changed in iOS 11 basically. So with the framework I use, it has a ti.media frame namespace, which includes things like cameras and audio and stuff like that. Now, before, if you didn't use the camera, if you didn't use the microphone, it didn't matter. If you were using any other part of ti.media, it was fine because you didn't use those bits. But with iOS 11, it picks up that whole – somehow it picks up that library and picks up all of its different aspects, including camera references. And so if you try and submit an app written in Titanium with iOS 11, it will reject it if you're using ti.media –
because it says info.plist
exactly. So even exactly. So even though it doesn't pop up with that, and it's not going to pop up with that because you're not using it, so all my apps now have to have that by default in the plist stuff. Which is, and then it gets through. And so that was okay. You know, that was okay. My mistake. Put it all in. That's now standard in all the apps I do. I now submit. And then it got rejected for the demo thing and a couple of others. But the weirdest one was that after the thing went live, I had left a bug in there to do with renaming a photo. So if you try to rename a photo, the app crashed, and it was some weird. It was to do with the backbone binding and library stuff that I was using, and there was just some weird thing going on, to do with either the TI SDK or iOS 11 because it worked fine on iOS 10. Anyway, fixed it and uploaded it, and it was all fine. But what was interesting to me was the fact that that wasn't found, and this app literally has five features. You know, you log in, you register or log in. You scan a QR code to grab a photo because it's basically for forensic stuff, or you can upload a photo from a URL or your gallery. You can keep the photos in a little list and then click them and pan around them and everything, and you can rename them and delete them. That's it. I mean, it's got very basic functions, and so I realized at that point, well, they clearly don't go through the whole app properly and test it. No. They get this almost dashboard that comes up. Here's the next app to review, and here's all your key points on it. And here's the relevant articles that it relates to that could be issues. And then they may well launch it and click on a couple of things, but that's it. It's not a full test, which is why I get some of these stupid rejections.
I used to be able to monitor it quite well because I had an app called Security, and it was one where you took a screenshot of your home screen and then you put it into this app, and then you opened the app and then you shut your phone. And this was before you had like passcodes on your phone and stuff. And when people unlocked the phone, they'd see that and think it was your home screen. And then when they tapped anywhere, it didn't do anything, but it logged a heat map of where they'd tapped. And then it would send you a video of them doing it. So if you were like at a pub or something, you could sit your phone down, go to the toilet, come back, and then you'd have a video in your email showing you what your friend had been looking at on your phone, or trying to look at on your phone, because they wouldn't necessarily realize to press the home button.
Yeah.
And so it was great when they tested it in review, because I got a load of screenshots of some random guy in app review, because obviously he'd used it, and it all went up to my server to then go out. So I knew no one had used the app because it wasn't live yet, and I could see exactly what functions of the app they'd use, and I had a load of screenshots of them and the room they were in. I could see like a whiteboard with like review process behind it and stuff. It was great. I wonder if I've still got those photos. Should try and find them.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But one time it went into review, it was out of review in 7 seconds, and all they'd done is opened the app, and that was it. And it's like, why did I have to wait 2 weeks for this? And it's infuriating when you then submit, like I had an urgent bug fix the other day for one of my client apps, submitted it, and then they rejected it for something completely different. And it's like, it's the same as the last version. All I've done is fixed one bug, and now you're stopping people from getting this bug fix because fucking rules, which is stupid. And it's not even breaking your rule, you've just misread it.
It's very frustrating. And I mean, I'm still learning stuff as you do each submission, because you'll find, you know, like this new one with the plist stuff. But obviously now I've adapted to that, and now that's what I'll do next time. But what I tend to do now with clients is, like, you know, we need to give Apple as much information as possible. So we give them a demo account, we explain what the app does, we give them any pointers, we give them any potential things where, you know, this is why we've done this, this is why it does that, if it's subscription based, this is how this works. But just to try and eliminate, there's bound to be something, they'll always come back with bloody something. But, you know, you just try and give them as much information as possible. And in some cases, what I've done or had to do in the past is I wrote an app for YouGov years ago, which is still in the App Store and crazily still in my account, which I should not have done. But I took it down at one point because I thought it's not being used. Then I got a phone call saying, can you put the app back up? it's like, I need to move this to you. But it's a simple app that I wrote, which basically works. It was designed for the same. So a select group would get a link in an email. And when they click the link, it opens the app. And then the app goes into this sort of ready to watch mode. And then at the time it shows on, it goes into a watching mode. And then you have this slider, which you slide left and right to say, are you happy or sad about what you're watching? And then when the show's over, you get these questions. And then you answer the questions, and it all goes up to the server, and they analyze it for their stats and all that stuff. But the key thing about it is, it's not going to work if there's no show to watch. Because A, there's no link to send, and B, no one's going to sit there in the review system just sliding the slider around for an hour. So there's no real functionality to look at. So when you download the app now, all you get is this weird sort of 6-page tutorial that explains how the app works, and that's it. And then it says, wait for a link. So obviously when we submitted it, they went, it doesn't do anything except show a tutorial. So we had to explain, because there's no login, there's none of that stuff. So I went back to them saying, well, this is what the app does. It's not going to work unless there's a show to watch. And they said, okay, that's fine. Just send us a video. So we actually recorded a video of us simulating this and showing, did like a 30-second show or something, and then did the slider. It timed out and then went to the screen with the questions, submitted, thanks very much, sent that to them, and they approved it. Sometimes it's worth, for an app, especially where people, because some clients will think, oh, this shouldn't be in the App Store because it only works with our service. Well, that's fine. I mean, banking apps, there's no way Apple could, unless there's a test account that HSBC provide or something.
That's how they do it.
Yeah, there's got to be something. So provide the test accounts, provide videos, just demos, whatever, as much information as possible to help. And that can obviously reduce it. But there's always that chance. I mean, I've turned down loads of projects where someone's either come up with an app that's just too simple and I say it's going to get rejected. You know, there's no way. It's going to cost this much for me to build it, and it's probably going to get rejected because it's too simple. Or it's just like, that should be better as a web app anyway, especially if it's I had the sort of classic ones where it's a cam girl app. And you're like, oh, okay. I don't think I want to do that one. And it's probably not going to get accepted by Apple, so you might want to just do that as a website. I mean, I get the whole thing. And like you say, it's frustrating and all these things. But every single example, and I still would love to be proved wrong, of every single mobile website that either runs in a hybrid wrapper or runs on a web page in an app is still terrible. It's still a terrible experience, and nothing is going to change that right now for me. And I'd love to be proved wrong, you know. But also, I don't see, maybe they are, but I don't see how Apple are going to add all of the PWA stuff like service workers and push to Safari in iOS. They might do it on the desktop, but I don't see them doing it in iOS.
No,
surely,
I don't
see
them doing it.
That's the only thing stopping, apart from just being sane and normal, it's the only thing stopping people switching to progressive web apps is suddenly having those things that you can't do with normal web apps, which, yeah, just seems crazy. But I just don't see it as a solution. And my tweet earlier was you know, the sarcastic tweet that I always do, which is every single year we hear the same thing. This is like, this is the year of Linux. It's like, this is the year of, the web apps are going to kill native apps. And yet year on year, the App Store revenue is still higher and downloads are higher and you and I are getting more inquiries than ever. And nobody asked me for web apps. Nobody asked me for Windows apps, even though I've got it on my website and I've got web stuff on my website. Everybody wants iOS. And if they want anything other than that, they want iOS plus Android.
Yeah.
And also, there's an app I'm doing at the moment, which is a really good example. It's a sort of, it's not a full-blown project yet. We're sort of doing some R&D. Basically, it's a media player to play, I can't talk about it in too much detail, but you're playing movies and TV shows. But it's for people traveling. And it's for people in certain situations on certain vehicles. The idea is that you could fire up your phone and watch something from a local server on that vehicle, yeah? And that could be a, you know, film, whatever. And they were asking me about, they need a native player because basically the film companies don't like the fact that the web, if it's a web solution, because it might be too hackable and people could get hold of the streams.
Of course.
So that's one key reason why, you know, security is going to be a big thing. And so I'm looking at trying to create, which is going to, this is going to be an interesting submission because essentially it's just a player. It runs from a link. So if you're in a web page on your device and you click a link, it's going to launch this app and play it in the player. But that's all it's going to do initially. It's not going to have other things to watch. It's just going to be the player. Hmm. So what we're doing is a quick proof of concept to put it into test flight for external testing to see if Apple approve it. And then if they don't, we're going to look at what we can add to it in terms of maybe some browsable shows and things, or you know, aspects of a web interface hybrid wise, like, you know, like the App Store, to bring in to just make it more more appealing so that they'll approve it. But that's, yeah, you know, that's a classic example. I just don't see it yet. I just don't get it. And nothing that I'm seeing in terms of the requests for native apps and the revenue that's being made and everything is convincing.
I mean, the review process is a pain in the ass, but it's their store at the end of the day. They can do what they want. I wish that they had clearer guidelines that they stuck to. Like, fine, if you want to ban people from using your emoji in UI, that's fine. Just announce the change in advance and then make that a rule. But to add these things arbitrarily is just annoying, especially if you've been working on something. I mean, it's not a big deal, in my opinion. Change it to a different icon. It doesn't really matter. But some people are pissed off about it. And it is annoying if you've been working on something for a long time and then you get rejected for something small and shitty and it's like, annoying.
Yeah, yeah.
So actually, I'm in the middle of a an interesting submission. Because there's an app idea I've been working on that I finally decided the other day I'll just submit it to Apple. And I think I tweeted that I reckon it's got about a 20% chance of being approved.
Yeah.
So it's an app I built called Playlist Precy. So you know with Apple Music, you get like custom playlists every week. They give you like, here's music we think you might like. Or they have like these deep dives and stuff. The problem with those is that I used to have a reminder set up in my to-do list to remind me every Thursday to go and listen to my new music list. So I could the love or dislike the songs, so I could tailor it better to the things that I actually like. Because otherwise it just sits there and keeps recommending me shit that I don't want to listen to. but the problem is that it's time consuming and I keep forgetting to do it. I used to do it in the car sometimes, but it's a pain in the ass to be like, okay, add that to my library, dislike that. And it's a very convoluted process. So with iOS 11, they added an Apple Music API and like this token thing that you can get to interact with it. So I can basically write an app that natively you say, yes, give access to my Apple Music, and then it gives me an API key so my server can then interact with all of the stuff that's in your Apple Music library, including liking and disliking songs, viewing your playlists that are recommended to you. So I built like a Tinder-style app where it plays the songs in the playlist one after the other. It's like little cards. And you can skip forward in them a bit. So you can be like, okay, skip forward 20 seconds to see if this gets any better. And then you can swipe it left to dislike it, swipe it right to love it, or swipe down to just skip it and go to the next song. And you go through the whole playlist, done. And the whole thing takes about, I did it this morning, took about 4 minutes to just do my entire 24-track playlist. And now I've got two new songs in my library and disliked 17. So hopefully next week it'll be better. But the problem is, I have no idea if it's going to get approved because A, you need an Apple Music account for it to work. So
right.
It has a whole load of setup where it's like, okay, give access to Apple Music, yes. And then it has to check to see if you have Apple Music set up. And if not, it goes, okay, you don't have Apple Music. Click here to join. And it uses their built-in system to try and sell you a Apple Music subscription. And then it lists the playlist and then you swipe through and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, I'm not sure if it's going to work, whether they'll reject it or not. Because it might be a use that they didn't expect for their thing. One of the rules is that you can't charge money for Apple services. So originally I was thinking, I'll let people maybe do 5 songs, a playlist, and then, you know, pay 99p or £2 to upgrade your account to let you do the whole playlist. It's like, right. That'll probably get rejected because then, I mean, there's no reason they can't do that in the Apple Music app, but it'll probably get rejected because I'm trying to monetize their service or some shit like that. So I was like, I won't do that. I'll just make it free and see if it gets through rather than wasting time adding stuff and see if it does. I thought if it gets approved, then later on I can add stuff to it and see if it works. But it went into review yesterday and then it got rejected because there was an endless spinner when it launched, which I'm fairly sure they sent me a screenshot and they were testing it on an iPad. And the only reason it should ever do that is if you're using a simulator, the page slides up to try and sell you an Apple Music account. It's like their own built-in thing. Doesn't work in the simulator. Like, it has a callback that just never gets called. It doesn't say fail or success. It just doesn't ever return it in the simulator. So I had to change all that and be like, okay, here's an error message that's very specific to App Store review in the app. If you're using this in the simulator, ain't going to work. So I've resubmitted it and we'll see what happens. But I'm not convinced. So if it doesn't, what I'll probably do is just open source it. Or I might get an enterprise account and just stick it on my website and say, yeah, anyone can download it. Might as well.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't, like I said, with all the issues that we get, you know, Android, Google, what was it, 600,000 apps they've just removed from the Android store that were considered crap. I need to check some of mine.
I
didn't get an email, so I'm thinking I'm okay.
Go on, sorry.
No, go on.
I have a mini rant about apps in general. And this is all about iPad, because this rejection reminded me of that frustrates me, is that the app that I built is iPhone only, because I couldn't be bothered to spend time the iPad design. Just because I thought the chance of it getting rejected is too high, I'm not going to waste another day tweaking things and making it nice for iPads, like iPhone only. But the problem is, with an iPhone only app, it still has to run on iPad. Like, they just run it as an iPhone app on there, which you think, yeah, that's fine, doesn't matter. But it does, because now, with iOS, well, since iOS 10, the minimum supported iPhone screen is the iPhone 5 size. So that aspect ratio, which is 5, 6, and 6 plus, all the same aspect ratio. The iPhone 10 screws things up slightly by being a different aspect ratio. But crucially, you didn't have to support the iPhone 4 and its horrible tiny little screen anymore. But on iPad, it runs at the iPhone 4 screen size. So you still have to do all of the customization shit to take your nice iPhone 5 aspect ratio design and then compress it. Which, if you've got fixed pages of content that don't scroll because they all work fine on an iPhone 5... suddenly you get rejected by the App Store because they're like, yeah, look shit on an iPad because everything's compressed and text is overrun. And you're like, oh, I forgot about the iPad. Why does it use the iPhone 4 size? And why in this day and age do you have to run an iPhone app on an iPad? When they introduced it, Steve Jobs pointed out, oh, isn't it great? We've got all these iPad apps and Android tablets are shit because they just run big Android apps. And I can see why they allowed it at first to try and get more apps on the iPad. But now, why the fuck do I have to have iPhone apps running on my iPad? Why can't I say this is an iPhone-only app? It does not run on iPad at all. I know they want you to make a universal app, but if it's not universal, I don't see why it should have to run.
Prevent installation on iPad.
And if it's going to, why can't it run at the iPhone 5 size with black bars down the side? Like it does on the... Because the bit that caught me out is that's what I thought they were doing. Because on my 12.9-inch iPad Pro, that is what happens. You get the iPhone 5 size. But on the normal 9.7-inch iPad, you get the iPhone 4 size. Very annoying.
Very annoying. Yeah.
So, and for ages, I was really excited about iOS 10 and iOS 11. It's like, yay, you no longer have to fuck around making iPhone 4 designs. Because the iPhone 4 bit was always the worst. I have like a helper file that's called is short screen. And it's like, okay, if is short screen, hide it. So for this app, the playlist app that I've done, the player view, the card, has like a nice big album artwork, the title of the song, artist name, and then some buttons. Now I've just got some code that goes, if it's running on the iPad, well, if it's running on the iPhone 4, which is going to be the iPad, don't show the album artwork. You know, bare interface, there's nothing there. Just compress it all down so that it fits. It's horrible. It's horrendous. It'd be awful running it on an iPad. I wouldn't use it. But I also think you shouldn't be using it on iPad. It's not designed for iPad.
Yeah.
Very frustrating.
I mean, there should be the thing to say, I don't want this available. I don't want this to be listed, because obviously you can just switch to iPhone tab or whatever it is in the App Store.
That's the stupid thing about the App Store as well. Like, I don't know if it does it now, but in the old App Store, when you searched for an app, it showed you iPad ones only.
Yes.
And it was stupid because it had the label didn't make sense, because it said iPad only. And then you tick it, and then it would say iPhone only, which wasn't true, because it would show you, it would still show you apps that ran natively on iPad, but they'd be listed under iPhone only, because they obviously had an iPhone app as well, because of course iPad apps have iPhone apps, because they're the same thing. So the whole labeling was stupid, but they'd already built it in such that it was hard to find these apps that run nicely on iPad. Because loads of clients would always say to me, oh, can you make it a universal app? And I'd be like, you really don't need to. It runs fine. And they're like, yeah, but people can't find it in the App Store. We get people complaining all the time. Our mutual project that we worked on, the Great British Bcount.
Yeah.
That was one of them. That was iPhone only. But then they kept having people try and download it on the iPad and not be able to find it, because they didn't know they had to click on the filter button and then go iPhone only to find it. So then I had to make it a universal app, which I did in the hackiest way possible. I think we discussed it a while ago, but I basically imported it, locked it to the same size, and then did a zoom scale. So it looks exactly the same as it would if you were running the iPhone app scale, because I couldn't be bothered to do an auto layout. But very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I've done some apps. I've done the word tin one I did for the kids is an iPad only app, which I haven't done on iPhone yet. I probably need to update that, but I need to add some speech stuff to that. But that's not such a big deal, because it's quite a simple app.
It's annoying.
But
I forget that it does it the other way around. Like, you can have an iPad app that obviously doesn't run on iPhone, but you can't have an iPhone app that doesn't run on iPad.
Yeah,
so it's very, very odd
process. Yeah, and I guess the only way to I was distracted earlier, because my, for some reason, Skype said my microphone had switched, and then it switched back. So my you're going to have to use your recording, because
it's done it twice where it's jumped. Your audio has gone shit for about 1 second and then jumped back.
Yeah, very strange. Anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, I guess the only way to restrict devices now, really, is by having a minimum iOS version as well, isn't it? Because you can't – it would be nice if you could actually restrict – old devices, maybe because, you know, you consider them to be too slow or whatever, or you've got a bug on a particular device and you only want to support new devices.
It's always been a pain. You can do it to an extent by supporting certain features. So if you only support, for example, I tried doing this in iOS 9 to get around not having to do the iPhone 4 version.
Right.
And the only way to do it was to say device must support Metal, which is their gaming thing. And that limited it to the iPhone 5, because you needed a 64-bit GPU.
Oh, interesting.
But then it didn't run on the iPhone 5 and 5C. There was no way of saying to an app, okay, I want it to run on everything that's supported but the iPhone 4. It was literally, okay, if you want to cut off the iPhone 4, people, we're going to cut off the iPhone 5 and 5C as well. So that was a pain. I think actually it might have worked if you said 64-bit mode as well. Maybe the iPhone 5 had a 64-bit processor. I can't remember the specifics, but I remember there was a case where there was a way that you couldn't actually limit that set, whereas all the way before, each new phone had added some new piece of hardware, so it was fairly easy to add like a limit. So in the old days, if you didn't want to support the iPhone 3G, you just said requires video camera, and then it was 3GS and above, and for iPhone 4, you could be like requires Retina display. And but nowadays, those flags, there's less and less and less of them, and there's still old devices hanging around. Like, does iOS 11 run on iPhone 5?
Yes.
It does, yeah.
Yes, because my kids have got old iPhone 5s.
iPhone 5 and 5C still run iOS 11. There's no way of saying don't run on those devices, which is crazy. I mean, I can understand why they do it, because they want it to be as inclusive as possible, and you need a pretty good reason to not do it. But then you get like games and stuff that say suitable only for... They actually list it in the description. Suitable for these devices. So you can still buy it and install it on a device that doesn't run on it, but it might just be utterly terrible. And you think, well, that's not... It would be better if it was just doesn't run on this, because when you buy something on iTunes, it knows what devices are in your list. It knows what device you're buying on it, because it's not like you're buying it in iTunes on your Mac anymore and syncing it like you might have used to, you know, back in 2009. So there's no reason that when you go to buy something, it can't say, are you sure it doesn't run on this device? In the same way that if I try and buy a game on Steam sometimes, I typically buy games on my Mac because it's easier, but then I install them on my PC the next time I fire it up. And oftentimes I'll buy games there and be like, you do know this doesn't have a Mac version, right? And it's like, yes, I know, that's fine, buy it. The App Store should have something the same as that. Like, this doesn't run on iPhone 5, are you sure? Yes.
Yeah, I would like that. I mean, Android give you a bit more, obviously they've got shitloads of devices. They give you a bit more flexibility, but I'm guessing, you know, iOS, Apple don't want you to be sort of targeting the iPhone 10, you know, and nothing else or whatever. But it definitely would make life easier, especially where I've had situations where certain devices have got issues. Not it's the same OS, but it's just for some reason that device. And, you know, if you're working on a particular project, and especially when the customer's, oh, yeah, we test it on an iPhone 4. And you're like, come on, who the hell's going to still be using an iPhone 4, for God's sake? So it is nice. I had a weird thing the other day, though, because, you know, the AR stuff doesn't work on the, I think they've got the 5S's, doesn't work on the 5S's.
Yes, but six and above only.
Yeah, but my... I am completely convinced that the iPad mini my daughter was using, which I think is an iPad mini 3, I want to say, might be a 2 or a 3. I was convinced that could use ARKit, because I'm sure there was a situation where Leo on his phone, or the phone he uses, didn't work, so he couldn't play that stack game. But on Ixie's iPad that she uses, it could. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I tried it the other day because she was firing up the stack game, and I said, oh, I'll put it in AR mode, and it said not supported on this device. So I don't know if I'm misremembering or if something's changed, because that's obviously, you know, there's been an iOS update since I think they introduced it in ARKit was 11. Was it iOS 11? Or was it 10?
Yeah,
it was 10. I can't remember.
No, I think it's 11. It's 11.
It was 11. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure it ran on it, because it was funny because I was thinking, oh, it's weird that it runs on that, but not the 5. I would have thought the 5S would be okay.
Trying to look it up at the moment. It's I know ARKit's a weird one, because I had a client that wants some ARKit stuff, and I was like, yeah, it's not going to run on these things. So it runs on, no, it's so iPhone, not even the iPhone 6. The 6S and 6S Plus.
Oh, no way.
7 and 7 Plus. The iPhone SE, because that's essentially a 6S. The iPad Pro, all of them, first gen and second gen. The 2017 iPad, that's the new low-cost one. The iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10. So it's basically anything with an A9, A10, or an A11 chip.
Huh, okay. So no iPad minis at all?
Nope.
What's the mini 4 then? What does that run? That's not an A...
Oh, the mini... is there a mini 4?
Yeah, I'm sure I've got the iPad mini 4. Because there was the one that was Retina. That was the first one.
Yeah.
iPad mini 2 was the first Retina one.
Oh, yeah, iPad mini
4. iPad mini 3 was the weird one where it was exactly the same as the iPad mini 2, but with a Touch ID. There was literally no other difference other than they added Touch ID. And then iPad mini 4 had an upgraded processor, I believe.
iPad mini 4 is the A8 chip. So, okay. No, that won't run with ARKit. You need A9.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
A9, A10, and A8.
What does the HomePod run? Is that A8?
HomePod's an A8. Apple
that could run
TV.
ARKit. That can't run ARKit because it hasn't got a screen.
And the Apple TV 4K runs an A8. Is it an A8? It might be an A8X.
That's quite cool that they can do 4K already. On that.
Oh, no, it's A10X. Sorry, it's an A10X chip. So yeah, the Apple TV could do the Apple TV. It's a crazy fast process. I mean, I get it. It must be HDR output. Which obviously something like the iPad Pro 12.9-inch is nowhere near that number of pixels.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a crazy, crazy powerful processor. In fact, I think the A10X chip is actually the one that's in the iPad Pro, and not
yes,
even
I think
the.
Yeah, and I think it's spec'd higher than a MacBook. Not, I don't think a MacBook Pro, but I think it was close.
Very, very close.
The new iPad Pros geekbenched faster than a MacBook, which is insane. Yeah. When they've got, I know the new MacBook's got no fan either, has it? But these are not only fanless; they're 4 mil thick, something like that.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's utterly insane.
Both
it's
of not the like iPad Pros, both the iPad Pros, the 10.5 and the 12.9, have got the A10X. I think my iPad Pro has an A9X because it was the original 12.9 inch one. But yeah, that A10X chip is crazy fast. So it's kind of bizarre that that's the thing that's inside the Apple TV.
it seems
underused.
we've sort of talked about it before as well, but it almost, I don't know, you know, it's like they're making these ridiculously fast processors. In the sort of future, I could see maybe a MacBook Pro or a MacBook that runs the A processor. And then maybe that is, if these rumors are true about trying to unify apps so they run on both, maybe that is, you know, the start of going down the line to be able to get to a point where apps can now run, you know, because if you've got an app that effectively can run on an A processor and an Intel processor, obviously it gets rebuilt or whatever, the distance to when they suddenly go, by the way, we're releasing a MacBook Pro or a MacBook that's running the A processor, it's not the same as when they went from, what was it, PowerPC to Intel, when suddenly everyone had to redevelop quickly. And it's going to be a shorter, there's going to be less friction, isn't there?
Well, there'll be no friction at all. They could already do it because, you could already run iPhone apps and iPad apps on Intel hardware because we already do. It's called the iPhone simulator.
That's true. Like,
there's no reason at all that apps can't run already on.
That is very true.
There are specific bits. Like, it always annoys me that the iPhone simulator can't use the camera that's built into the Mac, just because I had a photo app a while ago and I had to test it loads. It was a pain in the ass to keep building it on the device because it's just so much slower than building to the simulator. The simulator already does all that fine and quickly. I don't think we need an A8 chip an A series chip to get to that point, rebuild everything. But it also wouldn't surprise me if they did make it.
They'd be doing it for things like battery life and stuff, wouldn't they? I mean, you'd end up with a, you know, if they can run a MacBook and an iPad Pro with that much power with no fan, which obviously it's a tiny bit of power to power a fan, but it's still, there's a physical thing and there's noise and everything else.
Yeah.
If they can suddenly come up with a MacBook Pro, which runs an A12 or an A14 or whatever the hell they call it, that can be more powerful than the current ones, but give you battery life that's more like 20 hours or something crazy, that would be, you know, insane.
Yeah. I mean, their chip division is exceeding most other manufacturers in the market. So it would not surprise me if when we get to that point. And it also wouldn't surprise me if we get to that point and they go, yeah, you can run apps on it. It's all native compiled and lovely. But I also think if they're going to do that, they'll want them to run on everything that already can run them. Like, let's say the next version of Higher Sierra, lets you run these Sierra apps. Yeah.
Yeah, there's still two more then to go. Yeah, Higher still Sierra want, and Higher.
Yeah, even Higher still Sierra.
Yeah. Infinitely High Sierra. Oh, God.
But I would think that they're not going to say, oh, by the way, we made a new MacBook Pro. It's not going to be like the Touch ID thing. Touch Bar, where they're going to go, here's a new MacBook Pro, and it runs an A8 chip, and it can run iPhone apps. But none of the other Macs can. I would be surprised. It might be that it runs them better and more efficiently, and uses 50% less battery than other ones running them. But that's going to be the first move towards that sort of environment, I would think, if it happens.
Yeah.
Which I hope it does, because I often want to write Mac apps, but I can't be bothered trying to use the old NS stuff and having the coordinate space be the wrong way around, in my opinion, where the zero is the bottom left. It's like, ugh. It's too confusing. It's like, I could do it, but I don't want to. Whereas if it was like building a tvOS app or a watchOS app or something, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'm much more likely to build Mac apps now.
Yeah,
the Mac app store needs a kick up the ass, and that'd probably be what it would do it.
Yeah, it definitely needs something, because there's plenty of apps like the Twitter app or whatever that just they just seem to be abandoned and don't get updated. Every morning when you sort of check the app store or check your phone, and you suddenly see the bubble come up and there's, you know, 20 updates or something to iOS apps, and I get probably one a week to Mac apps, which is a shame, really, because, you know, I do like the platform. But anyway. Okay. Great. It's probably a good time
anything
to...
Anything else to mention?
I want to mention Homebridge. Yes, Homebridge. So you got me onto this.
And Luke Redpath got it onto me.
Right. So, well, let's don't give him too much credit. Anyway, so the reason I didn't, so I played with years and years ago when Siri came out. I remember I was working for another company and I was playing around with there was a hack you could do where you could run your own like local version of Siri, which was quite cool. And you could basically intercept Siri requests. Yeah.
I used it myself to make an app where you say to Siri, what are the times like on the Northern Line? And it would be like, Northern Line is delayed by 5 minutes. It was awesome. I absolutely loved
it. Yeah, it was really, exactly.
Shame it no longer works. I tried using it again a few weeks ago and it's dead because iOS 10 changed something.
When I heard about Homebridge and you were talking about Homebridge, I thought it was going to be a real hacky solution and I was going to have to, you know, mess around with network stuff and reroute things. And it was just going to be horribly hacky. And I think it was the day I tweeted, like Tuesday or something. I just thought, because we got Wemo switches and we've got all this other stuff going on. And obviously the HomePod's coming in, which is probably what prompted me to play around with it. And I thought, well, let's just see what's going on here, see if I can get it working. So I tested it on my notebook first. And it, you know, took 20 seconds to install and started it. And it's sitting there. It's like, okay, cool. Got no plugins. You know, there's nothing going on. So I go to the back to the website and look at their plugins and find one for Wemo, download that. It was the old one. I've now replaced it with a new one. And with the old one, you had to sort of say how many devices you're expecting, I guess, so it can do the searching. So I just typed in 20 or whatever and ran it again. And suddenly, bang, 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 all these Wemo devices pop up. And then I can suddenly say, you know, turn off Poppy Lamp or turn off whatever. And it was working. It was like, holy shit, this is cool. So I ended up replacing that one with a newer Wemo one because it was much more efficient. I added in Nest, which literally took about 2 minutes to go to the Nest site, set up an app. Get all the keys and everything, plug them all in to this config file, restart the server, and then I can do the temperature. And it comes up in the home app. Well, there's another home app, you know, not the official home app. There was the one that came out before from an independent developer, which I find actually makes a bit more sense. Yeah, in terms of just creating stuff and finding things is easier. And that actually comes up with an interface. When you click on the Nest, you get a lovely little interface to change the temperature and everything, but it responds to Siri. There's loads of them. I think they've done Hue ones, but I don't need that because I've got the Hue Bridge. But
see,
there's loads.
What got me onto it, I don't have that. And this is before the Hue Bridge came out and even supported HomeKits. But I've got that, and it's literally just you add in the config file platform Hue, and this is the key, and that was it.
Yeah.
Done. And
then exactly.
Works as if you had the bridge.
And it doesn't, you know, so for anyone who doesn't know what it is, it's obviously Homebridge is basically acting like a software version of a bridge, but for multiple devices. So you can now connect all kinds of things that would never normally be connected through HomeKit. And all you have to do is either run this thing on Mac OS or Linux. So you can actually get a Raspberry Pi. And actually there's an app in the App Store called Homebridge, which is, you know, been approved with iOS. People have used it on the Mac, and I did try and use it with the Mac one, but it's not recommended because it's a bit weird and glitchy. But basically, if you've got a Raspberry Pi, if you can set up a Raspberry Pi on your network, this app will connect to it via SSH. It will install Homebridge, configure it, give you a lovely little interface within the iPhone app where you can edit the config, add plugins, and do all this cool stuff. And all you've got to have is that machine on your local network. And because of the way HomeKit works, because you go into your home app and you register the Homebridge as a new device, and it gives you a QR code that comes up on the screen and you scan it and it adds it in as Homebridge. And if you've got an Apple TV or an iPad that's been configured to support HomeKit, it works outside. So I can be walking up the road away from my Wi-Fi network and I can turn on the temperature for when I get back. It's just brilliant. And as long as that server's running, it works. There's no other hacks. I did the update that they recommend to have it running as a service. So now when the Mac restarts, it starts up automatically, and I just love it. So I'm looking around. Oh, I'm not only looking around for plugins. I'm actually looking at how to write them because I think it would be fun to write some just to mess around with other things on the network. So it's really
cool. I wrote a couple of plugins. So I've got one that does Apple script files, so I could start iTunes on my computer remotely and stuff and play certain playlists. I think I made one that's based on a light bulb. It was based on a light bulb, so if you set the percentage, so if you say like set my Mac to 50%, it would then set the volume of the Mac to 50%. It's a kind of neat hack for
nice.
There's no volume control, and there is now because there's speakers, but I don't think they're supported in Homebridge yet because it's still up in the air. But it's the nice thing about it is that it works with any other HomeKit stuff that is done natively because it just sits alongside it. As far as Apple's concerned, the Homebridge is just a hub device. Like
exactly.
It pretends it is a real, and then everything is connected to that hub. So it works alongside all your other stuff. So for example, I've got one of these Nano Leaf Aurora lights in my office, and then I've got some Hue lights in my office. And in the home app, they're all assigned to be in my office, which is in the downstairs region. Now the Hue bulbs all go through Homebridge because I don't have the second gen hub. But if I say turn all the lights in the office or turn off the lights downstairs, they all just work in sync perfectly. It doesn't care that it's
that's very cool
running on my iMac. It's great. So I've got the Hue platform, the Wemo one, and I've got the Hive one as well for my temperature stuff.
Okay.
And like you say, it's great because from Control Center on your phone, you can pull that down, and I've got my downstairs and upstairs heating systems favorited, and you can just do a 3D press, and then you can just scroll your thumb up and down to set the temperature. It's fantastic. Works perfectly. The only bug with it is that it gives me an option to cool as well, because HomeKit was designed for Americans, where they obviously have heating and air conditioning.
Yeah, I get that as well.
And so it's a bit confused as to why the system doesn't have cooling. So you can say set it to cool, and it will do nothing, but a minor bug. But it is pretty cool, because you can suddenly add a load of stuff that doesn't have HomeKit support yet.
In my case, and it's fast.
It's so instantaneous.
Fast. Yeah, I mean, if I've got the official Wemo plugin or extension or skill, whatever you call it, for the Echo, and which did make it faster than when you just do the normal smart device type scan. But still, you know, you can say, turn on so-and-so light, and it will be like 1, 2, 3, click, and it comes on. With this, considering what it's doing, even, you know, I know it's a local server and everything, but it's still got to do all these different things. It's literally instantaneous. It's like I said before, you know, like we talked about like Hue lights and how Siri almost, as you're finishing the sentence, it's almost done it. You know, it's like it's
she already
somehow
knows that she needs to talk to the Hue bulb, so she's already made the connection and ready to send the exact command.
And it feels like this is similar in that I'm saying something which she already knows. Maybe the first time, because I remember when I showed Hannah, did it the first time, and it took a couple of seconds. She went, oh, that's not very fast. You know, it's like, oh. So I'm guessing maybe there's something going on where after it's done it the first time, it goes, right, I know that that's a Wemo now, yeah? And so now I know Wemo requests have to go to Homebridge. So the moment I start saying the words, turn on left corner cabinet, and I've said left corner, it's already rooted it, because it literally, I say turn on left corner cabinet, it goes click and it's on, and it's like done. The only thing that I find annoying is Siri's annoying responses. I wish she'd just say done or okay, but sometimes she'll do that. No problem, Jason, the left corner cabinet is now on, and it's like, okay, I don't need all that. I don't need all that confirmation, just a yes or no, done or not done. Thanks very much. But I love it. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely brought the stuff we used Echo for. It's definitely brought it more in line with that now. So it's just nice. I can do it from my watch. You know, I can just say, hey, Dingus, set the house to 22, and bang, the temperature's on 22. And when you walk in the hallway, you see the little Nest light up and the temperature slides up. It's awesome.
One of the nice things you can do with iOS 11 is that now you've got triggers and stuff, and also person awareness. So you can set it to do, I mean, this isn't Homebridge specific, but Homebridge opens it up to a load more devices. So you can do things like when you leave the house, you can have your Nest go down, or
nice.
In my instance, the Hive. So if I've left and my wife has left, then it can dial the temperature down. And when we come home, it can put it back up. Or I joined two lights together. So I have a string of lights in my wife's dressing room, which connects to a Wemo. So we just turn them on and off because it's like little, almost like a table lamp type thing. And then she's got a light in the ceiling, which is a Hue bulb. And now when you say turn on the dressing room light, which is just the single big one, it automatically turns on that one as well. They like connect them both. So you can have triggers so that when something happens on one device, it triggers an action on another device. And it's very, very flexible as to what that thing is. So you could have it be so you can really hack around with it. Like if you set a light bulb to 20% yellow, then it turns your heating to 30 degrees. Yeah, something crazy like that.
That's cool.
You can stitch loads of it together. And so I'm excited for when the Ring Pro gets HomeKit, promised it ages ago. I think that there is a plugin for it, but I don't think it works very well. I had terrible experiences with trying to get it to work with, but I've not tried it on home. Maybe I should. But then you can do things like tie your doorbell into stuff in the house as well. So if someone rings the doorbell, you could flash a light upstairs because you might not have heard it if you haven't bought a chime.
Yeah, I like so that idea. Cool.
I like the fact that I didn't have to spend 50 quid on a new hub for my Hue bulb. Because
yeah.
I really didn't want to have to buy a new bridge. I was like, such a pain in the ass.
Yeah, exactly. And Wemo are planning to do, they've got a Wemo bridge they announced, but it's typical with this stuff. They announce it and then it's listed on the American website and there's just no way of buying the damn thing. So this is a nice solution. So yeah, I'm pleased with that. It's a good find.
Apple have tried to improve HomeKit by now you can do it with just software. You don't need one of their authentication chips.
So yes.
Theoretically, things can be back updated, like the Wemos could be updated to it, but they have to have a good enough CPU to power the encryption stuff, so I don't think they do. And also, there's no incentive really for companies to backdate them when they can make a new one and sell it as a selling point, so that's not really worked the way that everyone had hoped. But there's no need for these hubs and stuff, like the devices can do it on their own now, so hopefully that'll happen. But for now, it's a great solution, works really, really well. I've been using it for maybe 2 years, I guess. And
yeah, I like it a lot.
It's fantastic.
Cool. All ready for home pod tomorrow, and I can test it with that.
Yeah. Right. I'm gonna go and set up my Sonos speakers, and I'll let you know how it goes next time.